Hello everyone, my name is Jacob Minnig. I am the host of the Behavior Health Integration Podcast. Today we have a very special guest, Michael Anthony, aka Michael Unbroken. Michael came from homeless to hero. Michael helps trauma survivors learn to love themselves and be the hero of their own story. Michael is the host of the Top 10 Think Unbroken Podcast. I just have to say for myself and all of my listeners, we are all in for a special treat. And without further ado, here is Michael.
Michael, man, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, dude. I'm excited.
Right off the bat, man, like, what really gave you the greatest motivation to get you on the path you are now in life?
Being tired of my own shit. I think that there's a lot of empirical truth into the reality that we as individuals can often be our own worst enemy. And that was very much the case for me. And being in my mid-20s, my life was very much a disaster, right? I was 350 pounds, smoking 2 packs a day, drinking myself to sleep. I was high from the moment I woke up to the moment I went to bed. And, you know, ultimately what it came down to was just a realization that I was living a life that everyone else had told me I was going to live. I was going to be a loser. I was going to be fat. I was stupid. You know, and these are things like my family told me, right? The community, what I come from. And, you know, a lot of people suffer and go through that. And I was living into that because I didn't yet understand that we have the power to control the life that we want to have. And in that, I learned so many different things about what it really means to step into being the one in control of your life. And that's the hard reality that I had to face, was that if anyone wants to change their life, they also have to face this reality. It's not that you are culpable. It's not your fault that bad things happen to you, right? At some point, you have to realize that the decisions that you're making are the very reason why you are in the position that you're in. And that's just a hard truth for people to sit in. That was a hard truth for me to sit in. And ultimately, within hitting a rock bottom, I realized that the only way that it was going to get different is if I made it different.
Do you think the biggest issue people face is that they get into that, like you said, that stuck mentality, like feeling sorry for themselves is the right word, but they're like, oh, well, my mom and my dad did this and I grew up in a traumatic environment and it's their fault that I'm like this. So I'm just going to stay like this.
Yeah, I mean, that's called being a victim, right? And you're more than welcome to be a victim. Like, I'm never going to take that from anyone. And, you know, if I think and I trace my life, growing up, when I was 4 years old, my mother cut off my right index finger, right? She's a drug addict and alcoholic. My stepdad beat the shit out of me constantly, put me in the hospital a bunch of times. We were homeless as kids for 4 years. I got addicted to drugs when I was 12 and I was drinking at 13. I got expelled from high school. I mean, shit, dude, like, fuck, I deserve to play the victim. So do you, especially if you've been through some bad things, right? And I will never take that from people. But you have to understand that being a victim has got you to where you are. And you can sit here all day long and blame the world, but that's not going to change the situation you're in. It's like standing on the side of the road and you have a flat tire and you're yelling at the nail that's in your tire instead of changing the thing. At some point, you're going to have to make a decision. Now, what's really interesting about that decision, you can continue to stand there and yell at the tire. Nothing's going to be different. You can try to fix it yourself, which you very likely can. It's just going to take you a long time. Or you can ask for help, right? You can go call fucking AAA. i.e. a coach, a therapist, a group, mentorship, community, whatever, and get support. And so that's the thing. It's like, you can be the victim. Go for it. Please do. I encourage it, because the more that you're in victimhood, the more that you recognize that you don't have to be. And to be honest with you, like, I don't think my life would have changed had I not really sat in the truth of my victimhood and me looking at my life and being like, oh, this is my fault. Right. I blamed everybody. I blamed my parents. I blamed the community. I blamed the school. I blamed the church. I blamed my friend. It's everybody's fault. It was never my fault. And then eventually what I came to realize, like, dude, I'm sitting here looking at my life and I'm like, oh my God, this is me. Right. This is me. Like, I am doing this. Nobody's doing this to me. And that was a really hard fucking rude awakening, because it made me realize the truth. And the truth is hard. right? The truth is hard. And the truth is especially hard if it's your truth. And in that, what I think is really interesting is that you can take that truth and you can run with it and you can do something with it, or you can bury yourself in it. Shame, guilt, judgment, right? And what I often encourage my clients to do is to sit and just think for a moment about whether or not shame and guilt and judgment brings any value to their life. Like, does it make your life better if you sit there and destroy yourself? You know, we were working with one of my clients, and obviously I can't say names, but she was in this position where her life was completely upside down. I mean, it was very reminiscent of where I was a decade plus ago. We just sat with her and I said, let's look at your behaviors. Why are you continuing to be a victim? And she goes, well, everybody always told me I'm going to be a loser. And I go, okay, cool. Do you believe that? And she goes, yeah. I go, do you know why you believe that? And she goes, no, I don't. And I go, I'll tell you why you believe that, because you have never given yourself the space or the grace to think anything other than I'm a loser, because that's the only thing your community's ever told you. Your family, your friends, your neighbors, you know, your boyfriends, they've all just said that. And you've played into that. And in that, I said, well, let's think about this. If mindset is ultimately the framework for how things change in our life, and you look at and understand one massive, massive reality that what you think becomes what you speak become your actions, and your actions become your reality, then if you're sitting around calling yourself a loser, you're going to act like a loser. And if you're acting like a loser, that is going to be reflective of your life. Maybe you'll be overweight, or you'll be smoking cigarettes, or, you know, you'll be in debt or working a dead-end job or in a relationship that doesn't fulfill you. And that's because you're doing exactly what people said you were going to do. And so I'm having this conversation with her, and I could just see the light bulb moment, right? Because so much of this is about causation and correlation, where if you can track, i.e. her parents called her a loser, to I am behaving like this because that is what I've been ingrained and embedded with, then you have the fuel to start to create a massive change around that. And so the only way that you cannot be a victim is you have to first acknowledge, like, oh my God, I'm this way for a reason. And most people will go, and this is very dangerous, most people will say, this is just who I am. And that is the most dangerous sentence in the English language, in any language, it doesn't matter, because you automatically have put yourself into a fixed mindset. And if that is what you choose to be, then you are stuck and nothing's going to change. But if you can sit there and map, oh, I behave this way because my parents did this, and this is the way that I reinforce that negative behavior in my life, then you have the ability to change. And today, this same client that I was working with, her life is totally different. She's married to an awesome dude. They just had their first kid. She's making more money than she's ever made in her life. And she's healthier than she's ever been. Why? Because we were able to understand how she got stuck to begin with.
Well, Michael, do you think it's more of like a transgenerational thing too? I know you're kind of big on that. I heard one of your videos about... I don't know if it's like trauma, like past traumas from families and generations. Could you maybe elaborate more on that?
Yeah, I mean, that stuff's going to carry in you, right? I mean, you know, you think about it. It's like generational wealth. You look at these people who they're seven generations removed from, you know, the Rockefellers, and they're filthy rich. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that holds true for trauma. Right? You're five generations removed from slavery. You're three generations removed from apartheid. You're all, you know, whatever it might be, it doesn't matter. But then also you're thinking about, okay, well, how many generations am I removed from my mom getting beat from my grandma getting beat from her mom, so on and so forth? Not that many. And so we're like, really, if you think about it, this generation, where we are at today, we're really the first group of people to collectively be like, wait a second, something here just does not make sense, right? Because obviously being and growing up in unkindness and pain and suffering, like, that ain't working for people, right? It's just not working, because the more abused that people are, the more that that plays out in their life in these long, long, deep detrimental ways. And so when you look at the measurement, you know, I think about this a lot, right? My mom is dead. She died legless in some random hotel in the middle of Indiana, overdosed on drugs. My grandma drank herself to death, right? And that's the generation. That's what my family comes from. And so you go, well, if they had access to information like this, would their lives have been different? Right. And so that's so much about what this mission and this journey is for me. It's about, can I create content? Can I create books and coaching and podcasts and conversations that just plant the seed for people? Right. Because I look at my brothers and my sister, for instance, who all experience very much of the same things that I did, and they don't beat the shit out of their kids. Right. And so that starts the end of the cycle. And so it's going to take a long time to heal this. It's going to take generations. Like, I recognize that I'm going to be dead before this mission is accomplished, but that doesn't mean that I'm not going to try. Right. And so every day it's about doing this and empowering people. And ultimately you have to map back again. If I can just teach people one thing, it's causation and correlation, right? You know, one of the clients I was working with, their parents were so hard on them about everything, right? You have to get straight A's or you're not good enough. You have to be on all the varsity sports or you're not good enough. You have to go graduate an Ivy League college cum laude or you're not good enough. And this person did all of these things. And you know how they felt every single day? That they weren't good enough, yeah. Right? And so think about the way, this is where I'm connecting. Think about this. So I'm in this session, I'm coaching, we're talking about this. This person, I said, map out the way that you think that your parents were treated. Do you think that they had to do the same? He's like, yeah. I was like, okay, do you think that their parents did the same? He's like, yeah, we come from a prominent family. I go, okay, cool. So then let's think about this for a second. That's generational, right? He goes, yeah. And I go, okay, cool. So what do you think that you have to do to learn to love yourself? He goes, well, I have to figure out how to be enough. And I go, well, great. Because you know what? Those degrees, that physical achievement that you've had, graduating from that college, working the job that you're working, is never going to make you feel like enough. The only way that you're ever going to feel like enough is that's going to have to be internal. And we're going to have to figure out what drives you to self-love. And so, yes, generational trauma impacts so many, really all of us, right? There's always, everybody's got a little bit of a skeleton in their family closet. And I think it's just about uncovering it, bringing it to the light, because when you bring things to the light, they cannot live in the darkness.
Man, I think that's so cool how you put those two examples together, where they may look different, but it's still like a negative cycle of belief, where you go to the one client who you need straight A's, this and that. Well, what would happen if that client was like, you know, I'm just going to do my own thing, you know, work at Walmart, whatever, be happy. Like, why would their parents dislike that? Because maybe that's like a breaking of a chain of some sort, right?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, everybody's different, right? Mm-hmm. But I'll say from a general perspective, the reason why their parents wouldn't like that is because their parents are getting their validation and worth through the accomplishments of their child. And because of that, what happens is when their child is not performing, they feel like that they are not good. And so that thing about good enough, again, it's secular. It's the same cycle. It's the same washing machine, different load of laundry. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so that, so much of that comes through, you know, when you get to that place of recognizing, especially about self-worth, and you're so ingrained into your parental system and the way that you are, the one thing that terrifies people when they're working with me is I tell them this. I go, you are going to have to take your parents out of your life for a period of time. Yeah. And that period of time is different, right? It could be 3 days, it could be 6 months, it could be 2 years, right? Whatever it is. I personally had to take my mother out of my life when I was 18. I told her, I said, I will never talk to you again. And until the day she died, I only talked to her like one time. Why? Not out of spite, not because I hated her, but because I recognized that if she stayed in my life, I was screwed. And the thing that happens with people is, and especially if you live in Western, really any society, people go, well, it's your family. And I'm like, and? Mm-hmm. And are they taking from you? Are you suffering because you're in connection with them? Do you feel less than when every time your phone rings, they go, well, tell me about the last accomplishment that you had, right? Or worse, they belittle you, they break you down, they beat you up. And so one of the things that when we get deep into this, and there's always time frame for the right way to approach this, but I go, look, it's time for you to go figure out who you are without them. And that's one of the most hard things that people have to do, is recognize that a lot of our independence, whether or not you actually can like reconcile what I'm about to say, your independence is not independent. It is dependent on your parents, and people get trapped in that.
So I want to go kind of back to like the child and parent relationship. I also watched another pretty cool video on you about like talking about parents and not feeling sorry for themselves. Or I think it was, they did the best they could, and that was like a form of gaslighting, right?
Yeah.
Could you have the mindset of, hey, I know my parents had it tough and they went through a lot of trauma, but does that give them the excuse that they did what they did to me? Is there a fine line between that?
Look, I know which one you're talking about, mm-hmm. and that post is very polarizing. When I post that, and it's because I want to create dialogue, right? So I want to have a conversation around something really hard. Because, dude, I will tell you 100% unequivocally, my parents did not do their best.
Yeah.
They didn't even fucking try. They didn't even show up, right? And so there is some truth to what I say, in that there is this place where people are always like, well, your parents did your best. I'm like, but did they?
Right.
Did they really though? And people will go, well, they didn't have the resources. I'm going to go, the library has been around for like 200 years. You sure right. they didn't have the resources? People have been in therapy and coaching and mentorship for the last 100 years. Like, I don't know about that, man. Sure, maybe 300 years ago, I'd go, yeah, they don't know. We're really animalistic just as a whole. I mean, even today, we very much are. But, you know, I think quite frequently, it's like, that's what the impact of generational trauma is, right? People will go, well, I'm parenting the way that I was parented, yep. and so that must be right. And then I like to drop into there. I go, well, wait a second. That's a really fixed mindset. Because if you turned out fucked up, right, for lack of a better right, way to right, phrase yeah. it, and you go and parent the same way that your parents parented you, and now your kids are fucked up, did you really do the best? Because a lot of people lie to themselves, right? A lot of people lie to themselves and they go, oh, I used to get beat all the time. I'm fine. Are you sure? Because I'm right. pretty sure you are emotionally incapable of having human connection with people. I'm pretty sure that you get triggered at the sound of closing doors. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that every single time someone gets into a conflict with you, no matter how small or big, you either shut down or you freak out. Are you sure your parents did the best that they could? Because to me, what they lack, and what a lot of people lack, is the space in which they're actually educating, right? Instead, we lead through pain. That's one of the worst parts about humanity, man. Mm-hmm. It's like, how the fuck can you expect somebody to learn and understand who they are if you just beat them?
You can't.
You're automatically in a cortisol state. You're in fight or flight. You're hyper triggered. You're now in hyper arousal. Your prefrontal cortex has effectively shut off. That is your planning and decision making mm-hmm. part of your brain. How can you learn anything? You can't. And so, yes, I realize that there are people, and there are people, I promise you, I'm going to get an email from somebody from this, and they're going to be like, my parents beat the shit out of me and I'm fine. I'm like, okay. Are you sure? Because I'm pretty sure you're probably triggered because you found the yes. space to send the email to me right now.
Who are you trying to convince right now is what you'd say.
Yeah. Don't convince me. My parents beat the shit out of me. I was not fine. Yeah. Dude, I'm probably still not fine. I still go to therapy. I still have a coach, right? And it's like, you look at that and you go, all right, hold on, pause for a second. Instead of just going to the defense, why don't we just sit here? And that's why I ask it in a question. I go, did your parents do the best? How could we do better? What are the things that are happening? You know, can we find a different solution? Is there a different avenue? Because literally all of the research points to the truth that spanking children does not have any efficacy, mm-hmm. period. None. There is not one research in the entire fucking world that proves otherwise. And so when you sit and you look at that, like, data does not lie.
Right.
Like at the end of the day, data does not lie. And you can sit here and try to convince yourself all you want that it doesn't matter, that it didn't mm-hmm. impact you, but it does. Look, we are the sum total of all of our experiences. That means every single thing that has ever happened to us impacts us.
Amen.
And to lie to yourself about that is super dangerous. And that's what most of our parents did. But you have to look, there's also more to this, right? We could literally talk about this for a whole hour. But I want to say this. You have to look at the way that most parents and people of the boomer generation were raised. Yep. You're on the backside of the Industrial Revolution. You're on the backside of war. You're on the backside of men coming home with massive amounts of PTSD. Yep. And people talk in the whole don't ask, don't tell policy, right? This, think about this. America is a military system, period, whether you like to admit it or not. And so all of that has a trickle down effect. And because of that, you have the society of boys who were raised and told, don't cry, right? Don't be a bitch, man up. And the women start to reinforce that. And so now you have this generation of closed off men who are raising our parents, right, in the 60s and 70s, where they have no control over having an emotional impact of a positive relationship.
Dude, can I tell you something right now? That stereotype still goes on today, even in the treatment centers that I work at as a counselor. It is absolutely ridiculous. It grinds my gears to like no end.
Yeah. Well, and that's why conversations like this matter, right? That's why research, like all the research coming out. I mean, I've had some of the greatest researchers and scientists on planet Earth on Think Unbroken, Dr. Caroline Leaf, Dr. Anna Lamke, Dr. Judd Brewer, I mean, Gabor Mate. I mean, dude, you name them, right? And it's like, these people are all pointing to the same thing. You can't have the greatest minds on planet Earth all telling you something and think it's not real, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And going back to when you were talking about all like the fight flight response, it kind of gets into, I don't know if you ever heard of the polyvagal theory.
Yeah, of course.
And I love it, by the way, because when you're even as a kid, if you're constantly in fight, flight, and freeze mode, that shuts off your brain. Like you were talking about the prefrontal cortex. It's like you don't know what safe is. So that in itself will greatly affect your relationships in the future.
Yeah, of course. Well, and plus you have to think this, I got to create context or people aren't going to understand what I'm about to say. Mm-hmm. Don't trust your brain. Your brain is a liar. Here's why. Your brain serves one function, survival. That's it. That's the only thing it cares about. And so when you understand that, when you understand the way that you're emotionally regulated with your amygdala, when you understand the way that your hippocampus helps you form memory, when you understand that when you are in a cortisol state, your body cannot functionally process in a way that helps those systems operate correctly, your CNS is all over, central nervous system is all over the place. What happens is that you are in a place of always measuring life through one window. Am I safe or am I not safe? And if you are not safe, think about this. Well, guess what? Your body automatically has an autonomic system that is regulated for safety and survival, which means when you are in positions in which you are not safe, the first thing that you do is you regress or you retreat. Now, if you are safe, the brain compartmentalizes that, puts it on a shelf and says, oh, okay, this is fine. I can do this thing. Now, here's what's really crazy. When you grow up in a traumatic household or you are abused or you have PTSD or even PTSD in general, the thing that happens, especially if it's built around your identity, i.e. when you show up as yourself, you are hurt, your brain automatically makes a distinction that being me, quote unquote, is not safe. So what happens is immediately you start to do whatever it takes to be safe. Now, what does that actually mean? Well, that means that you don't be yourself. It means that you bend to the role of other people. It means that you placate. It means that effectively you chameleon. Right? Mm-hmm. Because if you do that, you're safe. That was my experience. So when I was a kid, the most dangerous thing that I could do was have an opinion. It was the fastest way for me to get my head slammed into a wall. The most dangerous thing I could do is walk into my house. The fastest way to get beat, belittled. Like I couldn't even safely sneeze. I'm not even joking. Yeah. Right? And so what happens is you turn off. You become a robot and you bend to the world so that you are safe. That is autonomic. People have to understand that. And so what happens, and this is the worst part, man, this serves you for a period of time. So when you're 8, 16, 18 years old. This keeps you safe. This mechanism of survival protects you. And then what happens is you're 22, 36, 57 years old, and you don't know who you are. And you don't know how to say yes, and you don't know how to say no. And everything about your life is about what? Survival. And so when you are faced with the unknown, your body resorts to whatever safety mechanisms and coping mechanisms that you needed as survival as a child, which are typically detached. And also really, if you get deep into it, they're dangerous. And so that's why, look, addiction is about dopamine. Like, go read Dopamine Nation by Dr. Anna Lampke, because her work is incredible. But the thing about dopamine, it's the reward center of the brain. It makes you feel good. It makes you feel alive. Well, guess what? If you never feel alive, except when you get drunk, get high, have sex, do illegal things, hurt people, do intravenous drugs, the list goes on and on. Well, guess what? That's how you're going to want to operate, because that makes you feel good. Look, one of them, I know this is heavy, and for a lot of people, if you've never heard this before, it might be confusing, but if you can learn and understand your brain, you can set yourself free.
Mm-hmm. You know, and beautifully said too, and it really reminds me too about like motivation to change. And I'll look at like clients in my treatment centers, and it's sad because I'll have 56-year-olds in treatment where they'll live by these labels of like bipolar, schizoaffective. But again, at what point is it your intrinsic motivation? Like, I want to change my life. I want to do better. Because there is research saying like you can live with bipolar, you can live with schizophrenia and have a good life, right?
Yeah. Look, I don't know. It's different for everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really is. I wish that there was a simple do this and your life will be different, but there's not, man. You know, I've worked like even in my own journey, man, I've done name a modality. I've done it. Mm-hmm. I've invested a decade of my life and well over $250,000. I literally did the math one time because I wanted to know in myself. And some things worked and some things didn't. Some things made my life different. Some things didn't. Some things really, really played a heavy role into where I am today. Some things didn't. But all of it was always about me recognizing a North Star. And this is the same thing I try to teach my clients. It's like, look, the thing that you have to do is make a decision about who you want to be and move towards that every single day until it comes to fruition, knowing that it could be 2 years or it could be 10, right? And so that's the thing. It's like people just give up. It's easy to give up. It's easy to quit. Hell, fucking society tells you you should give up. Mm-hmm. Oh, life is so hard. Don't worry. Oh, go home. You know, go play video games. Take a bath. Drink a bottle of wine. Have some pills. Yeah, if this is the most medicated country on planet Earth. Don't get fooled. Mm-hmm. Like, people really need to wake up, man. And look, that's not to be defamatory for medication, because there are people who need it. Yep. 100%. Chemical imbalances are real. You cannot argue with data, period. Yep. That's how it works. But most people, at the first sign of stress, they go to anxiety medication. They go to depression medication. They self-label. They go, oh, man, I think I have whatever, so I'm going to go get a drug. And then they're fucking zombies because they don't want to deal with reality. And that sucks. But that's what we've been told that's acceptable and okay in this society. And now, look, I will tell you this straight up, and I've said this every time I've ever had this conversation. Mm-hmm. I am biased. I watched my mother and my grandmother kill themselves on prescription drugs. I have done it. I have seen what it does to communities. I've seen what it does to families. A lot of people, and statistically, it's a lot of people, do not need to be on the medications that they are on. Most people walk into the doctor, and this is a generalization. I know I'm going to get another fucking email. Most people walk into the doctor. They say, doc, I'm under stress. My kids are going nuts. I've got this job. We're in recession. COVID. Doc goes, cool. Here's 19 prescriptions. Ugh. Right? And that leads down this really dangerous road where people are like, yeah, I've been on antidepressant medication for 4 years. I'm like, it's probably not working. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's, again, this is all about truth. I, in my own personal life, at times have taken medication for anxiety or depression, trying to figure out if it works for me. It doesn't. I felt like a freaking zombie. What I did discover worked for me were all the modalities that everybody always tells you to do. Yeah. Workout. Don't eat processed food or sugar. Don't get drunk every night. Get good sleep. Get sun. Drink water. Be in communication with other people who are like-minded with you. Go and be of service to your community. Volunteer. Show up. Live your life. Quit the job you hate. Leave the relationship that doesn't serve you. You're fucking anxious because you won't do the thing you need to do. And people think a pill is a quick fix, and it's not. But again, there are chemical imbalances, and sometimes people need the medication, period. I will never argue that. But you got to get honest with yourself. Yeah. Are you just in a hard season? You might be.
Case of the blues. It reminds me of this show. Have you ever heard Generation RX, the documentary?
Yes, it was about the kids on Adderall, right?
Adderall and other anti-depression medications. Yeah, and there was this scene where this doctor who was more kind of against overprescribing was just like, well, Susie had a friend named Beth or whatever, and she moved away. Now Susie's sad. So we put our antidepressants, and the doctor was just like, see, that's what we need to change. Friends move away. That's a part of life. You get through it. You get over it. You don't need to take medications for that.
Yeah, totally. Yep. Look, I mean, that's the world we live in. We, especially if you live in North America, we live in the most pharmaceutical marketed country on planet Earth. Over half of the countries, it is actually, I think it's almost three quarters now. It's illegal for pharmaceutical companies to do any marketing or advertising. And here, it's like a $30 billion industry. Just the advertising side of it. I'll tell you this. I worked for one of the biggest health insurance companies in the world when I was 20 to 26 years old. I won't say who it is because I don't want to get fucking sued, but they were monstrous, man. I learned so much about the evils of insurance and the way that medical system in America works. Don't get fooled. You got to pay attention, man.
Well, it's all about the money, right?
100%. They don't care about you. There's this thing called reasonable and customary. And effectively what that means is there is a point in all medical insurance, well, they'll determine based on a bell curve, whether or not they will continue to pay for your care based on a sampling of a general population that is similar in demographics. So at one point you could be super sick and they go, well, Bob, who was also super sick, like he was fine after X. So we're not going to give you anymore. Don't get fooled by this.
Oh, it reminds me of the documentary, The Pharmacist with Big Pharma. Was it Purdue Pharma? Purdue, I think it was called.
Yeah.
The overprescription of opioids. Yeah, that was crazy.
OxyContin. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. And that drug right there, that's what destroyed my mother. Okay. I watched it start to finish.
Well, there was a salesman on there and he was just talking about his strategies. Like, the strategies don't go through all the communities, whatever. Go find the doctor that will sell you. Find the whale that will sell you the drugs. That's the best way to go to make the most money.
Yeah.
So now I want to go back to the age of 25. That's when you said you made your turning point, right?
Right.
Do you want to elaborate a little bit more on that? Like, what were your initial thoughts and your first steps of getting out of that rut?
Well, dude, it was not a rut. It was fucking like it was a crevice. It was a hole the size of planet Earth. You know, what's really interesting about that time is on paper, people would look at me and think I was very successful. Like life was good. I was working for that insurance company. I'm making six figures, got tall, blonde, beautiful girlfriend, but I'm a disaster. I'm 350 pounds, smoking two packs a day, drinking myself to sleep. I'm literally high from the moment I wake up till the moment I go to bed. And, you know, one of my brothers at one point said, never talk to me again. My friends were all like, dude, you're an asshole. I was $40,000 in debt, even though I was making six figure. Like it was everything was terrible because I realized that I was operating in that space of what people had told me I was going to be. And one day, the Saturday after the worst day of my life, I'm laying in bed and it's 11 o'clock in the morning. I'm smoking a joint and watching the CrossFit games, man. Like I'm at rock bottom, right? I'm sitting there just pounding chocolate cake in my face. I'm 350. It's gnarly. And for whatever reason, I decided to go to the bathroom and I looked at myself in the mirror and I remembered being 8 years old and the water company had come and turned our water off. And look, they were always turning off our water, our heat, electricity. I mean, we were getting evicted. Like I said, I lived with 30 different families over the course of 4 years as a kid, place to place to place. So it was just like a normal Tuesday to me. But I grab this little blue bucket. I walk across the street to our neighbor's house. And for the first time, I stole water. And I remember being like, man, when you're grown up, this is not going to be your life. And it wasn't, except it was, right? I was still that hurt, lost little boy and never done any of the real work. And as I looked at myself in the mirror, I asked myself, well, what are you willing to do to have the life that you want to have? And the answer was no excuses, just results. Mm-hmm. And what that meant was I wasn't going to be a victim anymore. I wasn't going to blame people. I wasn't going to negotiate with myself. And I was going to do whatever it took for me to get my life together. And so that meant a lot of things. And initially, I always tell people this because they look at me now and they go, man, your life's so different. I'm like, yeah, it is. But I promise you, the first 4 years were the hardest 4 years of my life, period. Because it was like I would take one step forward and a million steps backwards, right? I was constantly in this chaos of the struggle. And a lot of really powerful and beautiful things came from that because, one, it gave me the ability to recognize two things. One, you have to do the thing that keeps you awake at night. Mm-hmm. Like, that is the key to all of this. If there is something on your mind that you need to address, if you do not address it, you are going to be tortured. And I don't like being tortured. So that's where I started. I said, step one. And that meant a lot of things. And really, it meant about getting honest with people. It meant quit smoking, quit drinking every day, go to the gym, take care of my physical body, do yoga, meditate, journal, and then get really serious about therapy. I fired my therapist because I was like, I realized something about therapy that's important that people should listen to is that you have to treat therapy kind of like dating in okay. that you need to have some kind of common ground, right? And so I was going to see this dude who was like fucking white collar, white dude who'd never been through anything that I've ever been through. Right. And here I am, biracial guy from, you know, the hood who suffered one of the worst childhoods of all time. We have nothing in common. Like, this guy can't help me. Right. And so I simply said, well, let me find somebody who has a similar background. And then I found that person. I got massively serious about therapy. And then I got into coaching and personal development. And I started reading all the books and going to all the conferences and having all the mentorship and investing a tremendous amount of money into myself. And that started to just slowly but surely create a waterfall and, you know, lead me to where I am. But I can promise you, from that moment of looking in the mirror to today is almost 12 years ago. But every single day, I still have to put in the work. I still have to show up. I have to still take care of myself because it's still difficult. And that's what I teach my clients all the time. I'm like, yo, when you come into this, when you sign up on this dotted line, your life will be different. I promise you, it'll be different. I'm not saying better because I don't know what better means, but I know what different is. And I can tell you that when you do this, your life will be different. And you must accept that this is a rest of your life journey.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I want to go back to that white collar therapist. I know you guys didn't say you had the best rapport. Do you get a sense that he even tried to get to know you better or tried to understand your struggles?
You know, it's a great question, but I'll tell you this. I had already gone in with the mindset of this person can't help me. So it doesn't matter because I was only just lying to them. Dude, I was literally walking in their office, paying them hundreds of dollars a week. And just lying to them. Okay. But you have to understand, again, causation and correlation. Let's figure out why we do what we do. When I was 7, I had to go to therapy after I got molested. And when this happened, the therapist fucking told my mom everything I said.
Oh.
And so I learned not trust therapists. And so when I go to therapy, I'm thinking like, oh, this is the thing you're supposed to do. And I'm just telling them whatever. So great, great, great question. Chances are they probably did, but I mean, I don't know. That wasn't going to happen.
Yeah. No, I hear you, man. That's one of the struggles we as therapists have today with disclosure and stuff. And I go through like similar things when like I personally, I'm not in recovery, but I'm a counselor at a treatment center and a lot of them will look at me and be like, you don't know what I've been through. You've never been on hardcore drugs. Like, but I always feel like we always kind of make it just because of the fact that I still try to show love, unconditional love, empathy for them. So over time, they're going to know I care about them. And I get through that. We get through that. We break those walls.
Yeah. I think that's what it's all about is time, right? Is community and connection and honesty. And look, we all have our struggles. And I think vulnerability plays a big role because there are therapists who will not talk about their experiences. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they help people. I really don't. Yeah. right? There's no relatability in silence. And so, or, you know, I remember one time I walked in the therapist's office because I literally put together a checklist of the questions that I had to ask mm-hmm. as I went through, and I must have interviewed, I interviewed literally like 25 therapists. It yeah. might've been more, I don't even remember. And one of them goes, I don't like to talk about those things. I was like, you literally can't help me.
Right.
You can't help me. And I was, I tell them, I was like, okay, cool. You can't help me. I hope you have a great day. Good luck. I don't know how you could help anyone if you're not willing to be relatable and share mm-hmm. your vulnerability, because that's how we connect as human beings. One of my friends, Gary Brecka, who's amazing, he's literally a genius. He goes, you know, the greatest sense of vibration, the greatest vibration on planet Earth is authenticity. Yeah. And so, you know, when you think about that, when you're in connection, you always know who's keeping it real and who's not. Mm-hmm. It's just part, it's a defensive mechanism. It's a part of us.
Absolutely. Yeah. And as therapists, we're trained to use self-disclosure only if it like relates to like the client's story benefits, because a lot of bad therapists will do self-disclosure because they want a friend. They want to like prove to the client they're cool, they get it. And we just found it's not beneficial. But to your, and another argument, I will say this, we do need more multicultural therapists in the field. We need more African-American therapists. We need more Asian, Native American. It's only going to benefit the field.
Yeah, totally. I agree.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So as we're winding down, I just have to ask you, man, you've been through so much. You've done so much when it comes to your program, coaching, social media. And I just want to ask you, what are your future goals? What do you hope to accomplish next in your journey?
Dude, I only have one goal, period. My goal is to end generational trauma in my lifetime through education and information so another kid doesn't have a story like mine. That's it. It's the only thing I care about. And so whatever it takes between this moment to that moment, that's how I show up in the world. And so, you know, sometimes that means I've got to write the next book. I have to be on the next podcast, create the next coaching program, do the next interview, show up and speak on the next stage, do the next conference. Like it's, I just go all the time towards that goal. And so it's, you know, that's it. I don't care about anything in between this and that moment. I don't measure incremental goals. I just kind of look at life and go, am I going forward? Yes or no. And if the answer is yes, then I know I'm doing the right thing. If the answer is no, then I need to recalibrate. But it's ultimately all about that. And then, of course, I have life, right? I have my own personal life, which I do keep. I keep most of it separated from this just so I can have some autonomy in the world, you know, because sometimes a lot of times, actually, I do get stopped in the streets. And it's like, you know, I have a personal life. I have the things that I enjoy doing and that I don't think really matters to the cause, because that's just like not about the mission. So, you know, I think about that a lot, but ultimately it's about that one goal, just moving forward every day.
Can I ask you, how many books do you have out right now?
I got two out right now. The third one will be out in October.
Well, what are the first two books called?
The first one's Think Unbroken, Understanding and Overcoming Childhood Trauma. Okay. And the second one is Think Unbroken, 8 Steps to Healing Your Inner Child.
That's awesome. And again, to all my listeners, I will make sure I put those books on the show notes, so they're one click away.
Yeah, they're everywhere. And people can read them for free if you just listen to the podcast, because I just literally just read them on the podcast. So, and if you want to buy the book, you can. I don't really care. The other one is called Unbroken Men, A Men's Guide to Being the Hero of Their Own Story. And that's what will come out in October.
That's awesome. I cannot wait for that. I really. Well, this has been a tremendous experience, man. It was truly a pleasure. Now, if my listeners want to get a hold of you, is there like an email they could use, or a number they can call to make contact with you?
Yeah, I'm everywhere on social at Michael Unbroken. And in fact, I'm the only one who checks my social media. Nobody on my team does, because some people send me some really heavy stuff.
Okay.
Like that is just me. So if you want to feel like there's safety in that, know that no one on my team sees that. Don't email me, because everybody on my team sees that, because I hate checking email. And then you can listen to the Think Unbroken podcast. If you go to thinkunbrokenpodcast.com, it's on iTunes, Spotify, Good Pods. It's everywhere.
Well, again, it was a pleasure. Thank you, man.
Yeah, of course, my friend. I appreciate you.
I again want to thank Michael for another amazing episode, along with my BHI listeners. I just want to inform everyone that the information expressed in this episode was not meant to be taken as therapeutic advice or interventions. If you do find yourself struggling with any type of mental health or addiction issues, seek the care of a medical doctor or a licensed professional clinical counselor. All right, everyone, till next time, have a great day.